Maybe I stopped that a little too soon, but I was going to finish up by saying that one time when we were in the sap gathering business, Uncle Edgar would get us in the cab of that car. He'd take those big old hands of his and give you what he called a horse bite, and that was a big old cramp on the upper part of your leg that hurt like hell. And I told him to cut it out, and he wouldn't quit cutting it out. And I said, "By God, I'm going to fix you one of these days." And I got the chance to do it. And me and Carl Robinson, cousin Carl, Uncle Guy's son, was with us that day. I just took a great big bucket of sap that I had collected and hadn't dumped into the tank yet, and Uncle Edgar got out of the truck and I dumped it right over the top of his head. And boy, then I ran into the woods and he headed for home to take a shower, because that sap was with the sugar in it got sticky and everything like that. And I told him, I said, "By God, if you don't quit pinching me like that, by God, I'm going to do something." And I finally did. I dumped that bucket of sap, and I thought old Carl was going to have a fit. God, he's still laughing about it, I believe. Well, anyway, special occasions, the next block says, and I've been thinking about that. And of course, we had Thanksgiving, Christmas, all the holidays they have now, some extra ones that I don't hardly remember about. But in general, on the weekend, by time Saturday rolled around, why, they'd get the old washtub out. If you know what that is, it's something about 3 feet in diameter and about a foot and a half deep, and they'd have hot water that they'd heat in the old wood stove in what they called a cistern, and it'd hold probably 15-20 gallons of water. And while you were cooking breakfast and lunch and everything, why, it'd heat that water in that cistern, and about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, he'd call all the kids in and say it's bath time, and we'd all get a bath in the washtub. And I think they changed the water between the boys and the girls, but by the time we got done, 5 o'clock on Saturday, we all jumped in the back of the pickup truck, Mom and Dad in the front, all the kids in the back, and we headed for Keene on Saturday evening to go to Woolworths and Cress's and Kresge's, five and dime stores, and ooh and ah, stuff that we didn't have a nickel to buy. And so that was quite a deal on Saturday. On Sunday was a little different deal. I remember it was during the Depression, and a lot of people didn't have a lot to eat, but I can't ever remember going hungry. But we got sent off to church pretty early in the morning, I think about 10:30, quarter to 11, got out about 12 o'clock, and that was most of the kids went. I don't ever remember my mother and dad ever going to church, but they made sure we went. And by the time we got home, Mother had a big dinner on the stove. Some kind of a roast or ham or chicken or something like that. And boy, it was a good meal. And we'd sit there and eat a noon meal. Then in the evening, we'd either goad Dad into making some molasses candy, which was a taffy type thing you had to pull, and it'd pull and then it would harden into a molasses candy, or we'd pop a whole lot of popcorn and make molasses over the popcorn and make corn balls out of it, or we'd have grilled cheese sandwiches, and that was our evening meal. I can remember when I got up to be 16, 17, 18 years old, I'd never had a cup of coffee in my life, and Dad said, well, you better learn how to drink coffee if you're going out in the world here. By the time you graduate from high school, you need to know how to drink coffee. So that was when I started to drink coffee, but I very seldom drank it in the evening until I got married to Elaine, and she was out of a Swedish and Irish family, and they sure liked their coffee, and I come to find out I just couldn't sleep very well at night unless I had a cup of coffee around 6-7 o'clock in the evening. So that was starting of my drinking coffee pretty regular for breakfast in the evening. But those were quite some days on Sundays when we were growing up, and we either had candy or popcorn and milk or toasted cheese sandwiches or something like that. It was quite an occasion. Well, there was a lot to do, even around a small town like Marlboro. There was right around 1,500 people in Marlboro, but we had a highway split there. One highway went to Troy and Jaffrey, and one went to Dublin and Peterborough. And there was a drugstore we had. We had two grocery stores, but we had no combination stores, so to speak. No real big stores. Old Tucker Bemis had a little shop there. Old Glendenning had a barber shop and candy and tobacco store, and where you could get ice cream and stuff like that. And I used to work for him. If he was busy cutting hair, well, I'd wait on people in the candy and tobacco place. And it's pretty interesting because he had a couple illegal slot machines, one-armed bandits in the back rooms. And he got me playing those at a time. He'd say, you better go back there and put a nickel in or a dime in. He says, I think one of those machines about ready to pop. And of course, the people would come over from the blanket mill across the street, and they'd play it. But I can't ever remember him getting raided. They had a pinball machine out in the front, which wasn't supposed to pay off, but it did. And he had the one-armed bandits in the back room. And I can remember, I made some money on some of those machines. And back when I was a kid, I had $5 bills tucked away in my stamp book and places like that where nobody else knew it was. I never told anybody about gambling and getting $5 out of those machines or anything like that. But there was quite a bit to do around town. And no, I sure didn't hang around the house a lot. If it was nighttime and we were out playing some night games and stuff like that. And yeah, we had a beautiful swimming hole. The only trouble was it was a quarry where they took granite out of a big hole in the ground, and I guess they must have run into a spring down there and it filled up with water. And I was told at one time that was about 100 feet deep, and if you were going to swim there was no beach and no wading. You took a dive and swam back up and grabbed hold and clawed your way up back up onto the cliff. But the highest part of it was as much as 8 or 10 feet above the water level, and you could do some pretty fancy dives off of that. But it was a granite quarry, but it had been abandoned, of course, because it filled up with water. But it was nice pure water at the time of the drought. They'd draw some water out of it for the town water supply, so it was good spring water, and it was dandy swimming. And what little bit of swimming I learned, I had to learn at that quarry. The other place we went to was a mill pond across the East Main Street or Highway 101 from Grandma Wizzle's house. Was a mill dam and had some pretty deep water, and I remember some kids pushing me in there, and I told them, I can't swim. And when they dove in after me, I climbed right up on top of their shoulders, and they finally waded me up back to the shore and got me back up on the dam abutment. But we had lots of things to do around town. We didn't lack for things to do. Okay, I'm going to stop this thing again and think about something, and we'll go on from there. I see I got about 10 minutes on this thing already.